Welcome to Fran Coach's Franchising 101 podcast series. Here we talk about all things franchising. What is it all about? Is it for you? How do you find the best one to own? And so much more. Now your host, Tim Parmeter.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the latest edition of Fran Coach's Franchising 101 podcast series. I'm Tim Parmeter, founder and CEO of Fran Coach and your Franchising 101 host. Today, we have a fantastic guest with us that is one of our franchise partners in the fast casual food arena. We tell clients all the time, franchising is so much more than just food, but guess what? It is also food. And this is really, I think, one of the premier opportunities out there. So we're excited to bring him on. Joining us today is the Executive Director of Franchise Growth, which is a super cool title, by the way, for Teriyaki Madness, Mr. Tyler DeMuth. Tyler, how are you today?
Living the dream, Tim. Always happy to talk teriyaki any given day of the week. So, thanks for having me on, and look forward to going through and answering any questions and getting people up to speed on all things Teriyaki Madness.
Buckle up, brother. We got a lot to talk about with the madness that is Teriyaki Madness. But first, dude, we don't care about Teriyaki Madness right now. We care about you. So, always love hearing people a little background about Tyler. Like, and again, think Reader's Digest, not dissertation, when you go into this, right? But give us a little on your background and how did you get into this crazy industry that is franchising?
Yeah, I think it's probably similar to a lot of folks in the sense that I kind of stumbled into the franchise world. Always been aware of franchises, like everyone always initially jumps to food, right? And Taco Bell and Wendy's. I knew that was a franchise, but I started off in the website hosting and marketing world. So we were running campaigns for franchisees, franchisors, Tillamook Cheese, couple of others, and that's where I kind of got my feet wet. Long story short, my dad got sick. I had a midlife crisis at God knows what, 26, 27 years old. Moved back here to Denver, and then Teriyaki Madness found me. And I was sitting there like maybe a lot of folks that could be listening to this podcast, where I was like, what is Teriyaki Madness and why should I care? And so I basically took my digital background. I scraped the entire footprint of Teriyaki Madness from an SEO standpoint, online reviews. What's the community saying about, franchising and more importantly, Teriyaki Madness? And it was a cult following, cult in the best possible way. And so we went and tried the food, out here in Denver at one of our local shops. Loved the food, and I was like, okay, I get it. It's not Panda Express. It's a premium product at a slightly premium price, but we focus on ingredients and being highly customizable and tailoring it to different individuals based on dietary restrictions, food needs, but also just providing a clean product. And that was important to me. And then really what sold me on Teriyaki Madness and joining up with the team was really the team, led by Michael Haith, our owner and CEO, who acquired the business from our founders in 2016. But he comes from a heavy background of being in the franchise space. He was a franchisee, owned two different concepts as a franchisor that he ended up selling to buy out the founders. And the part that I loved about it is that he put his own money where his mouth was. So he really kind of focused on the pillar. Of franchising, or pillars for that matter, which is formalized systems, processes, support. And I think that's a big reason why we can work with folks that don't necessarily come from food backgrounds. I think about 75-80% of my system comes from limited, if not zero, food background. So we've overdone training, and that I think is what has led to all the success that we've seen since Michael took over in 2016. So I've been here about 5 years now.
Yeah, and I've been around 7.5 in the industry, and was Teriyaki Madness one of the first ones I got introduced to. And the change from when Michael came over, and really just like, I was always kind of said, like, he kind of brought in like an all-star team from a leadership standpoint when there were just a handful of these out there, which, and then like you said, and he wasn't doing this playing with somebody else's money, right? Like, this was This is out of his own pocket, right? Which is super cool. And we want to get into the support and everything like that in a moment. But I'm still stuck on the fact that you're having a midlife crisis at 26, 27. What is it called when I'm at 53? Because that's really like, I almost just like kicked you off right there for that. But I've known you a long time. I like you, brother. So I'm going to let it slide. But know your audience, at least from the host.
My DNA doesn't last very long, Tim. My DNA doesn't last very long. So you got to like what you do. And I think, I've had maybe 5 or 6 bad days in the last 5 years. So, it's good to be part of a good team. So midlife crisis though at 26, 27. Not great.
No, and you guys do like the team that's involved, just top to bottom, fantastic. Whether they're front facing, it's somebody behind the scenes, it is high quality across the board with that. And let's go back to the teriyaki madness, right? Because from a food concept. Yeah. Pretend like we're a consumer, right? So you guys aren't selling cheeseburgers and pizza with something called teriyaki madness. What are we going to see as a consumer standpoint? We're hungry. We want something to eat. What can we come get?
Yeah. So, for teriyaki madness, we're not trying to be everything to everyone, but what we do, we want to make sure we're some of the best at. So it's a limited menu. You come in, you select a base. So your white rice, your brown rice, fried rice across either one of those two, or yakisoba noodles. You pick a protein. Our core proteins are chicken, steak, tofu, and salmon. And there's variations of each. So we got spicy chickens, our biggest seller for folks that have been to a shop more than 2 times. And then it's that customizability. So we have about, I think we have 9 sauces that we make in-house as of today. And, it's pick your own adventure. So if you want our spicy sauce wrapped around orange chicken, so it still has the crunch of orange chicken, but more of a flavorful sauce instead of sweet, we can do that. And then it comes with a 5 vegetable medley, made to order. So you're typically about a 5 to 8 minute ticket time in general, handful of appetizers like egg rolls, crab rangoons, chicken pot stickers, edamame, and a couple of others. But once again, I'll say that we just want to be the best at just a few things. And I think you hold on to about 85 total SKUs as a restaurant owner across all recipes, marinade, sauces. So it's easy to manage, but there's still more bowl variations than there are days in the year. So you can come to TMAD, 3-5 times a week, and you get a different product, different flavor profiles that speaks to anyone from 10, young kids, right, all the way up to 55, 65, 70 and beyond, because it is as healthy as you want it to be. We kind of hang out in that health aware group. So not necessarily health conscious, but folks that are kind of aware of what they're putting in their body and want to make sure that they're eating high quality ingredients versus, vegetables that were sliced, 5 weeks ago in a factory.
Yeah, that's might have been the tomato I saw at the Subway here locally the other day. So, and you referenced Panda, and I always use Panda Express when I explain you guys, because you rattled off a few of those menu items that I have had before that are tasty. And even though I just had lunch, I'm hungry now from that. But Panda's, I think, the bigger one that people are going to know. And you can't really trash them, but I don't mind, right? But it's, you go into Panda Express, everything's in the bowl already behind the counter. And maybe it just got dumped in there. Maybe it's been there for 25 minutes. We don't really know, right? And I think one of the biggest things, and I know you guys will talk more about the ingredients and product and all those things, and not to discount that, but from a consumer standpoint, I come to TMAD, I'm getting exactly what I want. It's made hot, fresh for me, and poof, there. Yes, I may have to wait up an entire 5 minutes for my food, right? But I know it's poof, it's there, and it's hot and fresh, and truly makes a big difference from that standpoint. And now all I'm thinking about is, when can I get to a teriyaki madness to eat? So
nailed it, right?
Yeah.
It's that hot, fresh, highly customizable. As a comparison, I mean, Panda Express, we get compared to more often than not, which is fair because they're the largest Asian brand out there, right? 2,000 plus ish locations. There's not a lot of competition in our space. And so we do stand out quite a bit, but I think a fair comparison or analogy, if you will, that I use is like Panda Express is kind of like a Subway, where we're kind of like a Jersey Mike's. So we're kind of that premium product, premium price, and you know, you're paying for it to be, you know, highly customizable and made exactly the way you want versus sitting under a heat lamp for 2 hours getting dried out.
Yeah, that sounds tasty, doesn't it? So talk about the owner, right? And you mentioned, I was tell people in franchising, in almost every case, and we're partnered almost 600 franchises now, and almost all of them will tell you the number one thing they're looking for is not industry experience. You could be the biggest slob on the planet and own a cleaning franchise because you're not the one cleaning. Food sometimes is a little bit different, right? But because of all the systems and support you have in place, food background isn't really super important for you guys. I mean, you mentioned a big percentage don't have any or much. Talk a little bit about what that owner is doing. What are you looking for if they're not back there scooping up the sauce all day long? What are you really looking for in an owner?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I'll say it boils down to a couple of things. One is the ability to follow systems, processes, right? Like welcome to franchising. Don't reinvent the wheel, right? If we say cook the egg roll for 3 minutes, it's 3 minutes. Not 2 minutes and 30 seconds. It's not 3 minutes and 30 seconds. It's three. So ability to follow systems processes, being highly coachable, I'll say is that other component. And that's why we can work with folks that don't come from food is because through our training, people go through about 4 weeks, just shy of 4 weeks of comprehensive training prior to and as they open. We'll teach them anything there is to know about running a teriyaki madness, top to bottom, whether it's cooking chicken, inventory ordering. But what we don't want to teach is kind of this business mindset, which is the other big thing that we look for. You know, we're looking for a business mentality, a business mindset. We can fill in the gaps in the rest. And then lastly, I'll say it's about building teams. So folks that are really good at building teams thrive in our system. Because we also don't really want to see owners long-term flipping chicken. Like if it's cathartic to owners to go in there and flip chicken, by all means, you'll know a guy, right? Flip away. But generally, we want to see owners kind of transition pretty quickly from working in the business to working on the business because their time is better spent managing P&Ls, building the team, building relationships with the local community, and they let their manager run the day-to-day show. The only caveat to that is, yeah, when things go wrong, the owner has to grab the bag, right? It's still their business. So, if, you know, their whole team wins the lottery, right? And they disappear. Sure, you might be flipping chicken that afternoon. But I always say it's not rocket science, right? I'm not hanging out with Elon Musk on a daily basis, building rocket ships or crazy electric cars. You know, it is a lot of hard work in that first kind of 3 to 6 month period. But as long as they're coachable and, you know, willing to follow a process and are good at building teams, we can work with those individuals and they have thrived in our system. We got some of the best validation out there, or best franchise feedback or franchise satisfaction, if you will, out there. And we're not doing anything revolutionary outside of the fact that we're promising what we can deliver. And then we very much deliver. And we support that owner from top to bottom throughout their entire life cycle with them because their success is ours and ours is theirs.
Yep. And I appreciate you guys are always very honest. Like this shouldn't come as a surprise, but being a franchise owner is hard work, right? Even if you're a semi-absentee owner, you still have to put forth the effort, right? And I always use the acronym FSO, like figure stuff out. Right. They usually use a different word for the stuff. Right. But as an owner, you have like something's going to happen. Right. And you have the best laid plans in the world. What's the old Mike Tyson thing? Everybody's got a plan to get punched in the nose. Right. And then what are you going to do? Right. You do have to have that mentality. And I always appreciate you guys are brutally honest with people. Like, yeah, you got to work your ass off. Like follow the plan, right? You have to understand all the different nuances of this, but it's not, it's not rocket science. You mentioned a couple of times, and I appreciate this greatly because it's, I'll try to stay off my soapbox on labor issues. Oh, there's labor issues. Oh, there's a labor shortage. Sure. There's a leadership shortage, right? And you mentioned Jersey Mike's is my favorite story. It was Jersey Mike's by our house in Florida, that the guy that runs that thing is the biggest jack, you know what, on the planet. And every time I go, he is yelling at people, like yelling at the kids behind the counter. There's never the same kid behind the counter in a two week period. That has nothing to do with labor shortage. That's leadership shortage. And that you guys focus so much on that, building the team with that. And you have to be able to embrace that and build that culture is huge. Are you still going to have turnover? Well, yes, right? I mean, there are executives that have turnover, right? At those positions, but the focus on that, building the team and that culture is huge. So I love that you guys talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, when I was chatting to you a couple of weeks ago and that came up, right, I think leadership shortage is the best way to describe it. Like, I candidly have owners that have turned over their system of employees maybe two times in 18 months. That's unique in a negative way. Yeah. I have other owners that have had the same core staff for the last 5 or 6 years, and they love showing up to work. Our model is built around being able to pay a premium wage. So, you know, if you pay minimum wage, you get minimum wage results. It'll usually end up costing you more anyway, but there's always going to be someone else that's willing to pay more than you, right? As a business owner, as a franchisor, same deal. We run a couple of corporate shops. We see it as well. So if we pay a competitive wage and then we build a team or a culture that's around growth and treating people the way they want to be treated, like, yeah, it's not rocket science. You know, you have to engage the team. You have to care about the team, and they will care about you as the business owner. But if you think of them as just, a cog in the wheel, then yeah, you're going to turn over a lot of staff just naturally. And it's like, I don't care what you pay them. Whether you pay six figures or 17 bucks an hour, you're going to run into the same stuff. And that's a lot of what we touch on generally in initial training is, hey, let's think through compensation structures. Let's think through the culture. Teriyaki Madness has their own culture, but internally, every shop owner is going to create their own kind of subculture. And we want to make sure that it's built the right way. You incentivize people the right way. And by incentivize, I'm not just talking dollars, right? It's education, it's learning. How can you help them grow as humans? Because you'll work with young folks from 16 all the way up to semi-retired or quasi-retired people that aren't looking for a wage. They're just looking to stay busy. So there's a lot of non-traditional employees out there that are happy to come to work as long as you treat them right. But if you just treat them like a number, as you said, right? Like, it's not going to go well. I don't care what business you're looking at.
No, it is not. It is not just the money from that standpoint. And I've always appreciated that you guys have had that like kind of team building component to it. And one of the things from a staff standpoint, you guys, for the revenue that you guys do on average for your stores, which just, and you may not be able to say this, but I will, just a little over $1 million, I think, on average, right? Which is fantastic for what a small footprint and a small labor model. Because what's the current stat? How many orders are placed outside the four walls? This is one of my favorite things. And I want to tell a story about trying to call you on your BS with this and then find it out that it was 100% true. So what is that number running pretty closely for you guys right now?
So pre-COVID, we did 70% of our business outside the four walls in the form of catering, third-party delivery, or pickup and to-go. As we sit today, we probably do 80 to 85% of our business outside the four walls, which is crazy, right? We have a shop out in California. They're doing huge numbers. Our average unit volume is 1.1 million, 1.16 and some change in our FDD. We have every P&L that's in there that's been open for at least 2 years, good, bad, or indifferent. So highly transparent. But we got someone out there doing $2.2, almost $2.3 million out of 1,800 square feet. It's crazy. We're not Starbucks, right? We're not having people come in, sit with their laptop. Hey, welcome to 8 hours sitting in your teriyaki madness. The food is built to travel. We've leveraged technology in a very heavy way. So our online ordering app, same people that built Smashburger and Qdoba's, reduces fees of working with third-party delivery vendors. So it still is a very, let's call it healthy, if not a very profitable transaction for folks versus just an UberEats.com. But yeah, we do a lot of business outside the four walls. We did it pre-COVID. COVID highlighted, let me make sure I say this right, but like COVID highlighted business strengths and business weaknesses across every segment. No one that I know in the franchisor world was preparing for a pandemic, right? We didn't see a pandemic coming. But what we did see and why Michael built the business the way he has is that, you know, he saw that the restaurant industry is starting to collapse footprint, lower employee counts, right? And simple menus. You see it with Buffalo Wild Wings, where they stood up a Buffalo Wild Wings Go, which is operates out of 1,800 square feet. They don't want to sit on 4,500 square feet or whatever that is. But yeah, we do a lot of business outside the four walls. A big, vast majority of that comes through our own app or our own website versus like an UberEats.com. So it reinforces the margin side. And then I'll just say the food carries and travels well, right? So as consumers travel with product and they're looking for more of that kind of right now, kind of component as a result of maybe the Amazon culture that they built of, I want it today or yesterday. We were prepared for that and we had the technology to back it up. But then at the end of the day, it doesn't get soggy. Burgers, fries, sandwiches, the sogginess factor is the real deal in our experience.
Yep.
And I think that's the sweet spot.
Yeah, no, I think the packaging thing, I think for food businesses, March 2020, right, when the whole world changes, like they weren't prepared for that, right? If it's a pizza, okay, sure, pizza, we know we get that. You guys were already there and didn't really. I mean, I can't imagine there's a business that didn't take a little bit of a bump March, April 2020, right? But especially from a food standpoint, yours is more of a blip versus, oh dear Lord, what are we going to do, right? Because you had well-trained customers already. You're already getting 7 out of 10 of your orders placed outside and going outside, right? So having that there was humongous. And I distinctly remember 3-4 years ago when you first given me that thing and me sitting in the Teriyaki Madness in Gilbert, Arizona, I'm like, Tyler is full of crap. There is no way. And I sat there and I faced there and I'm like, I'm counting the next 10 people. And the first two got their food and they sat down. And I'm like, he is full of it. And I'll be damned if it wasn't 7 out of 10, like got it, whether it was Uber Eats, DoorDash, whatever, they got it to go. Now, granted, that's a sample size of 10, right? But I'm like, oh, and then you see how it's packaged. It is, you guys were there already. Well, I mean, way before I think really it was commonplace to go to an app for food, right? You guys were already there very much ahead of the curve. So as everybody's trying to catch up, you guys are just chilling there, killing it with, million plus in revenue, right? Which is, again, kudos to, when I go back to that leadership team that you're a part of with Michael, like, it's all-star caliber that again, people are ahead of the curve and thinking like, not the, well, this is how we've always done it, so therefore let's always do it that way. You can't think that way anymore. You can, but you're not going to last, right? So
yeah, cool. You got to always challenge the status quo, right? Like Michael is a big proponent of that. And, you know, we sat there, you know, January pre-COVID saying, hey, we're 3 to 5 years ahead of the industry. COVID lands, we saw a drop in sales that first 45 to maybe 70 days, depending on shop location. And then it rebounds. So we were up 32% from a stacked year over year, same store sales standpoint from 2019 to the end of last year. And it continues to head that direction. But we were basically 3 to 5 years ahead to right on track. And so now we're all sitting here saying, okay, what's 3 to 5 years from today in terms of the restaurant industry? I think we're about 9 months, give or take, away from delivering our first bowl with a drone. Go figure. Teriyaki madness flying through the air, dropping off food. So we're giving Amazon a run for their money, let's call it. So that's what, you know, people should be looking for in a franchisor is, you know, if they're coasting, you know, if a franchisor is coasting, they're going to go extinct, whether it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now, whatever that is, versus, you know, hey, let's turn everything on its head and look at it in a different way. And, you know, hey, everything we do won't make absolute sense, right? Like we run a lot of pilots. 1 out of 10 of them will clear pilots and be implemented full time. But you got to be looking at it and challenging how you operate. And I think that's an interesting part that people get from talking with our franchisees is that we do listen. We listen to franchisees. We look at ourselves in the mirror and say, hey, is there a better way to do this? You know, that we maybe haven't thought of. And that's that kind of community or that network of franchisees that we're really looking to partner with long term. We have 114 open as of today. We'll open another 30 to 35 conservatively by the end of this year, on track to do north of 60 next year. But they're all very like-minded individuals. You know, they're leaders, they're following systems, processes, and it's just a culture that seems to really blend together in a beautiful way. And it ends up resulting in a beautiful financial performance more often than not.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love it. And I think if anything, with the pandemic, and I think we're probably all way tired of saying the word pandemic, but you look back into spring of 2020, it's adapt or die. And if you can't adapt, like it's going to be a real, real struggle. And I know you're a sports guy. I'm a big Moneyball, right? Movie, like the book and the Michael Lewis book. And if somebody hasn't read that, I mean, watch the movie. Sure, it's fun, right? But the book is fantastic, and it's market inefficiencies, right? Just because we've always done it this way, maybe that's the way we still need to do it. But if we're not asking the question and we're not looking for other ways, like eventually you're going to get passed by. And the fact that I'm looking forward to that drone dropping off a bowl at my house, that's pretty stinking cool. So I'll text you my address for that when we're ready for that. So I know you're super busy and are very appreciative of your time. So I'll kind of float one big last one out there to you. And I know there's probably a million ways you could go with this, but what else would you want us to know about Teriyaki Madness that maybe we haven't talked about today?
Yeah, I mean, I could probably fill the next 2 hours, right? I love to talk in general, you know. So there's a flavor or component of that, but I'll say that we focus on a core skill set. We're simple across the board, whether you're looking at menu, labor counts, sizes of locations. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'll say that we're one of the fastest growing big restaurant chains out there. When you start beating out, you know, Wingstop and Jersey Mike's and winning those awards that we have last year and continue to win this year and years prior to that even, it's knowing who you are, right? And who we're looking for. So we have about a 4 to 8 week kind of education qualification process that everyone goes through. Look, we're not for everyone. Everyone is not for us, but what they will get from us, right? You know, if you introduce them to us, Tim, is, you know, they're going to get transparency. The mousetrap works, right? And by mousetrap, Teriyaki Madness in terms of a business unit. You know, and there's clear things we look for as someone goes through the process, but, you know, it's stay in our lane. We're not going to act like someone we're not, but, you know, it's that culture of individuals that I think has been the most impressive for me to watch. Because when I started here, I think I was started at about 31, 32 open sites. We should bring on north of 100 units this year that they'll build out over the next couple of years. And watching that momentum grow and that culture, we just had our Teriyaki Madness conference up in Vail, Colorado. Franchisees loved it because it was shared knowledge, it's shared culture, and, you know, great times financially and otherwise, as long as people are following that kind of core skill set. But the big takeaway is I'll say is, you know, think simplicity, think small, right, in general. And then very healthy margins. You know, and that's all on our websites and our item 19. Tim, if you know, they chat with you and want to make that connection, we can get them that information pretty quickly. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. Otherwise, you know, if I start getting into the nuts and bolts, man, you're going to be here. Clear your calendar, buddy. Clear your calendar.
A three-parter with Tyler and Teriyaki Madness. So no, and I just I appreciate you coming on and I feel kind of crazy that I've gone this long doing this and not had you guys on, because I've always enjoy talking and working with you. Michael, the CEO, is good, and just the entire team and everybody of our clients that have taken a look, even if they didn't move forward, they walk away with just what you said. They had a good experience. It was transparent, right? And if anything, you guys are like, you know, instead of lying to them to get them to be a franchise, you're more likely to scare them off, right? Or paint a really accurate picture. You got to work hard, right? You got to follow the plan. It's not going to just like rain $1,000 bills on day one, right? But if you follow the process and utilize all of the systems of support, it's not rocket science, and we're like, guess what? We're always going to eat, and just over the last several years, we keep getting a little bit more health conscious, right? Like, cheeseburger's good, right? But it's not necessarily always good for us, and again, having something a little healthier, that with better ingredients, all of those things going in there to attract that consumer is key. So, I love it, man. Thank you.
Well, and I think just to kind of piggyback on that, you know, it's, you know, the current state of the world, right, is an interesting place, whether you're looking at, you know, pandemics, the war in Ukraine, inflation, potential recessions, right? We're very nimble as an organization. And I think some of the best franchisors are, regardless of size, they're nimble in their thought process. They're quick to execute when need be. But historically, you know, we love recession. You know, 2008, 2009, great for business for us. Turns out we also kind of like pandemics from a transaction standpoint, not as humans, right? Humans, we're not big fans. But like that's that piece that as people are starting to pull money out of homes, you know, pulling equity out or to diversify outside of the current business that they've been in or are trying to exit. Certain food categories like a Teriyaki Madness make a lot of sense. There's a lot of other categories that you represent as well that can make a tremendous amount of sense. But we all share that same kind of pillar of being nimble, being performance-based, and putting our franchisees first. You know, the franchisor is at first. We doubled down when COVID came. So we doubled down on marketing for franchisees and partnering with those folks versus, you know, hey, how do we run a new limited time offer to, you know, increase top line revenue, but decrease margin. Some franchisors went about it that way, or they played full defense. We played offense. And it very much has paid for itself. And that's that kind of culture that we've been running with and that, you know, we'll continue to grow with. But it's a lot of fun. You know, it's not all hard work. It's a lot of fun to be had. You know, and what we do over the next 5-7 years will be impressive. I wouldn't be surprised if we're sitting at 500 plus open locations over the next 5-6 years.
Yeah, nor would I. So, Tyler, thank you, my friend. Always good to talk to you and hear about Teriyaki Madness. So we appreciate you coming on with us today.
No, absolute pleasure. If you guys ever are curious, tap Tim over there at Fran Coach, Franchising 101 podcast. Great, right? Outside of listening to my voice for however long this is. But other than that, life is good.
Great. And great way to plug the show. So, and franchising101podcast.net, francoach.net. You want to learn about franchising? You're listening to the Franchising 101 podcast. Of course you do. Never any fee for our service, whether it's Teriyaki Mattis or any of the almost 600 brands we're working with. Let's talk. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Have a fantastic rest of your day. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Fran Coach's Franchising 101 podcast, where our ultimate goal is to help educate you on all things franchising so you can create your better tomorrow.